say even 5% tax-free on my money, then I get a bank line of credit that's only 3% a year, right? That means even if I use the line of credit, I'm still making 2% a year because I'm making 2% more than that 3% I'm paying on. But the cool thing is I can take that and still go and invest in real estate, make, say I'm only making 10%, which is a conservative return of real estate. I'm making 10% plus 2% means I made 12% instead of just 10 using my own cash.
This show is brought to you today by Lightbulb Podcasting. Are you a busy professional that needs to get more time back in their schedule? If you are a podcaster like me, you have enough on your plate. Why not outsource your podcast production? From editing, show notes, keywords, scheduling, volume balancing and editing, and creating audiograms, podcast production is another job in and of itself. That's why I use Lightbulb Podcasting. Get phenomenal support and an affordable price while you concentrate on growing your brand. Go to www.lightbulbpodcasting.com today to schedule an introductory call. Put your content in the spotlight.
Are you tired of the 9-to-5 lifestyle? Do you want more freedom to do what you want, when you want it, without sacrificing your current income? Then this is the show for you. Every week, we dive into John's journey towards financial freedom and everything he has learned since 2014. Real estate investing, cryptocurrency, stocks, private lending, foreign residency, tax saving strategies, infinite banking, assets protection, and much more. Now, here is your host, the founder of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus, John Rickgarn.
Afternoon or evening, depending on when you're listening to this. This is John Rickgarn, your host, as always, of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast. This is the first time you're joining us. Be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if this is not your first time, welcome back. And I'm very anxious for today's episode discussion, as well as guest. I was kind of trying to think of a topic, so to speak. And then I thought, well, what if I did like a non-controversial topic, like abortion or religion or something like that. But then along those lines, like, well, what if we talked about Dave Ramsey, you know, the self-proclaimed financial peace guy, financial guru, live debt-free, never have debt, never have a mortgage, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, to be fair, he's got millions of followers, millions of fans, millions of graduates, if you will, from his program. Now, I will give credit where credit is due. I think Dave Ramsey has done a lot of good. I think he has helped a number of people that, you know, I'm maxed out on my credit card debts. I'm paying 24%+ interest. I have no net worth. I have no cash flow. I, you know, live paycheck to paycheck. And I think for those, you know, he definitely helps to get their budget on track, shall we say. But I think beyond that, when he gets into, you know, how all debt is bad and how all life insurance is bad or whole life insurance, then I think he kind of just bundles all his advice into a one size fits all, if you will. And with that, today's guest I actually have on, not a financial advisor per se, but an anti-financial advisor, as he calls himself, Chris Miles, who is the host of the very popular podcast, Money Ripples. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here, John.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And I know we had kind of joked a little bit off camera and obviously back and forth on Facebook, kind of poking fun on Dave Ramsey and kind of just led the discussion of, hey, you want to be on my show? And I'm glad we were finally able to get here. So like I said, we're talking about a very non-controversial topic. And I know a lot of people kind of praise Dave Ramsey up and down, but maybe we'll just jump right in. You being the anti-financial advisor, why do you feel that Dave Ramsey's advice is so bad for most people?
Well, you know, you led with this already. I mean, you're right. He's done a lot of good for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, think of it like this, like, you know, when we're trying to learn math in school, you know, it's good to know addition and subtraction, mm-hmm. but you can't stop there, can you? I mean, no. You got to go into multiplication, division, fractions, decimals. You know, there's a lot of things with life that we don't even realize we use math for. Mm-hmm. But if we just stop the addition and subtraction, it's going to make life a little bit more difficult. And that's what it's true with Dave Ramsey and his financial advice, is that he gives really good basic stuff, does great with those first few baby steps about mm-hmm. make sure you have a little emergency cushion, making sure you've got eventually a good emergency reserve, stay on a budget, you know, essentially spend less than you earn. Yeah. These are pretty, should be common sense type of real, you know, I would say strategies. I'm not going to say principles. There's a, I'll talk about the difference there because he talks about principles and strategies being the same and they're not. But I mean, he does a great job on the intro level stuff. It's like remedial math.
Yeah.
But if you truly want to prosper, if you really want to become financially free, you need to go beyond that. And I find that all the time because the like Dave Ramsey's poster children, the people that saved everything, spent nothing, right? And they saved it all up in these mutual funds, like he was telling you to do, because you're supposed to make 12% a year, which you do not make in mutual
supposedly
funds, never have, you know, other than the last 13, you know, previous 13 years, you get that kind of return, but you don't get that normally. And so when he claims all this stuff, what happens is I get a lot of these people coming to me saying, Chris, okay, I've got $1 million, $2 million net worth, but I can't stop working. I can't retire because it's all based on this accumulation mentality, this mindset, which is what I taught as a financial advisor 20 years ago, and it doesn't work, right? And I'll tell you, even my dad, you know, I mean, my real inspiration for, you know, before I became the anti-financial advisor, right? I mean, as a kid growing up, you know, my dad was a hardworking middle-class guy. He always taught me to save. He was proud that he paid off his mortgage early on his house, even though he bought it in the 70s when the interest rates were way higher than they are today.
Right.
You know, I mean, he did all that stuff. I mean, he was saving his 401ks and everything. And I remember, though, despite all that, he would still say things to me like, Chris, you know, even just normal stuff like, hey, we can't afford this. Or what do you think? Money grows on trees. What do you think I am, made of money? You know, he would say all these kind of things. Or the worst one, the one that that really inspired me to even go in the financial field. He would say things like, Chris, I'm going to end up dying working. Like, I'm never going to be able to retire. Now, he did everything by the book that Dave Ramsey would teach. He was doing it before Dave Ramsey taught it, right? He was doing it when Dave Ramsey was going bankrupt. My dad was doing the Dave Ramsey method, right? And here's the thing is that I got to the point where I became a financial advisor inspired by that. I thought, I want to learn about money and I want to see if I can give my dad at least a year of his life back. Instead of working till he's dying, can he at least have some time off? So I became a financial advisor and did that for several years. And then I realized as I sat down with him at his table, the same table he was telling me, hey, we're broke, right? We can't afford it. Money doesn't grow on trees. Now I'm sitting at his table now in the reverse role of trying to help him with his money. And as I look at it all, I said, well, Dad, based on your situation, if you want to retire right now, you would have to hope to die in 6 years. So the good news is, Dad, you can live at least more than 1 year.
Yeah.
Bad news is that you would have to die soon. and otherwise he was going to run out of money. And he'd done everything right, everything by the book, yet it wasn't enough. And as I looked at my own clients, they were all in the same situation, even after decades of financial advice, putting their money in mutual funds, doing everything they were supposed to do. Y2K, of course, put my dad back a little bit because he was hoping to retire in the early 2000s. Then Y2K hit him. Right when that was starting to take off, then bam, he gets hit by the recession, right? And, you know, he set back 15, 20 years from his goal. And this is happening to everybody. And what I found is after years of being in that field, not only were my clients never becoming financial free, nor anybody else's clients, but neither, most importantly, were the financial advisors. None of them were becoming financially free either. And that's when my friend Doug popped in the scene. It's like when the student's ready, the teacher appears. Doug, he was actually a guy I trained to be a financial advisor, quit to go do real estate investing. And I called him up one day and I said, hey, Doug, how's it going? Like, how's that real estate thing going for you? He said, oh, Chris, it's amazing. My dad and I have partnered up on some deals and we've now doubled my dad's income as a professor at the local university. I said, hold on. You just started doing this 5 months ago. That's too good to be true. There's no way. He said, Chris, we're doing it. And so after a while, he finally just, he pointed out to me, he said, Chris, how many of your clients are financially free? And I said, well, none that are free where they feel free. He said, well, good job. Way to go. How about this? How many of you guys as financial advisors are financially free? As I thought about the guys working in my office, that have been working there since the late 70s. I said, well, they're still hustling too. So none. So this probably isn't working. And so that's why I went the alternative investment route in 2006. Oh, I had to learn. I wanted to know. I quit being a financial advisor, said I'll never teach about money again. Went to go do that. And then the next thing you know, of course, I'm able to apply the same stuff. I'm able to get out of the rat race when I was 28 years old, almost 29. And I'm like, That was so easy. And I had to flip the mindset. I had to get out of that Dave Ramsey mentality to see it, to even believe it. I mean, remember, I was trained to be a financial advisor, mm-hmm. yet none of us could figure it out. We couldn't crack the code. It took us doing something very different. And that's what Dave Ramsey doesn't get, right? And this is not just Dave Ramsey. This is financial education across the board, because all financial education is taught by financial institutions that are teaching you to lock your money away, put it there forever, let it compound, because a miracle of compound interest, the eighth wonder of the world, which Einstein never said, by the way. but they quote it like crazy, don't they? They try to teach us that this is the answer, yet evidence would tell us that has never worked. It has not been the answer. The only time I've seen people really become financially free with their mutual fund investments, they didn't make it in their mutual funds. They end up selling a business for millions. Or they did real estate investing. That helped them retire. And then the mutual funds was just on the side.
Yeah.
No one's truly, like, as in my experience, nobody who's been putting enough money in 401k can truly live a life free. They mm-hmm. might live a very cheap fixed budget life, but they can't live free. And that's the problem. And that's why the poster children of Dave Ramsey come to us saying, hey, we've got money locked up in prison. We got them locked up in IRAs and 401ks. We got money locked up in equity in our home. Mm-hmm. What do we do with this? Because obviously we're not making anything. Like, how do we get our money to start working harder for us than we are working harder for that money? Mm-hmm. And that's really what kind of created Money Ripples in the first place. And why we started teaching this was really help people break free of that. And so again, Dave, bless his heart, as he would say, you know, he's better than he deserves, as he would also say.
Oh yeah. Yep.
But again, like he's only getting you to a certain point. And again, mm-hmm. if you're just trying to get to zero, awesome.
He is
great. If you're a spender, a spendaholic, you need Dave Ramsey. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people, even my own clients who were spendaholics, do his program, come back actually saving money, which then we can turn into cash flow.
Right.
That's the part he doesn't do. Whenever he starts telling you about how to create wealth, how to save up in mutual funds and things like that, that's where it breaks down. Mm-hmm. And same thing, you know, where you refer me to the video about the life insurance agent that called him up and said that, hey, it's situational. It always depends. Sometimes this could be good. Sometimes it's not. And Dave's like, it's always bad. Holy.
Yeah, horrible, exactly. Right?
You know, he makes these blanket statements, just like he made a blanket statement that the stock market returns 12%. Mm-hmm. Just so you know, the S&P 500, I just recently updated the numbers. The 30-year average of the S&P is 8.3% of a real actual return. Not 12. Mm-hmm. It's always been between 7 and 8% for that 30-year average. Now, it did get up to like 8.5% when we hit the market high. And then when it started coming back down, it started settling down again.
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, if I do it tomorrow, it might be 8.2%. But either way, that's what the S&P does before fees and taxes come out. Mm-hmm. So when you start putting in those numbers in a calculator saying, well, what if I only make, say, 7.5%? If you have mutual funds outside of the S&P, you're likely not making the same as the S&P. But if you say you only made 7.5%, and then if say inflation is not 2 or 3% like the government claims, but let's just say it's 5%, mm-hmm. You'll start to realize even if you get a match with a 401k, you can match whatever you put into a 401k per year is what you're going to be able to live on per year. So if you put in $20,000 a year, max funding a 401k, you're likely to be able to live on $20,000 a year based on even conservative return, you know, types of inflation, conservative mm-hmm. return inflation, as well as realistic returns of the stock market.
Yeah. Well, and I always kind of look at too, and I mean, I can't remember who said it, but if you torture the data enough, it'll tell you whatever you want to hear. And I think a lot of, you know, whether it's Dave Ramsey or any financial advisor, you know, they always talk about, well, it gets whatever, 12%, 10% average returns. And they're not lying per se, but they're just kind of not telling the whole truth. I mean, I always think of like, now granted, this is an extreme example, but if you invest in 10,000 and the market just takes a huge hit, like in 2008, and it drops 50%, then you got 5,000. And then, I don't know, you invest in the next Tesla or Facebook or whatever the case may be, and then it goes up 100%. And well, I'm back to 10,000. I'm right back where I was after 2 years. Well,
that's a 25% return.
Exactly. You, myself, and everyone else is like,
actual return.
Yeah, we're right back to where we started. Mm-hmm. Factor in inflation, we're actually behind, but just simple math, you know, negative 50 plus 100 divided by 2 gives me a 25% average return. So, hey, I beat Dave Ramsey's mutual fund by over double.
Yep. There's an old phrase out there that says figures don't lie, but liars figure.
Yeah.
And And that's what it is. I mean, all the time. I mean, I remember even as a financial advisor, I would actually look at certain months, you know, going from, you know, month of, you know, 1929, for example, like I'd be like, oh, if I look at April of 1929 to, you know, to 2004, right? Mm-hmm. Same April, that number looks better than if I did March to March.
Yeah.
Right. So I look at those things like, ooh, which one looks better? I can justify those numbers, right?
Yeah.
I'm not lying. I'm just showing a different perspective, aren't mm-hmm. I? And that's what you're seeing out there today is that that's why you can't trust. If you hear about the economics, right? You hear about the economy, you can't trust money managers mm-hmm. because of course they're always going to say buy, right? It's like financial advisors. They're always going to say buy. Financial yep. advisors are just salesmen in suits. They're not mm-hmm. financial experts. They are literally, and I know I was one of them. You're trained as a salesman. You're trained to offer a certain very defined suite of products, mm-hmm. right? And these products are all just mutual fund or insurance based. That's it. You know, yeah. there's nothing else outside of it. You know, somebody asks a financial advisor, what do you think about investing in real estate? I'm going to say, you know, it's kind of risky. And yeah. by the way, look at real estate. It's only gone up 3% per year average. It just keeps up with inflation.
Yeah.
You should only do mutual funds because you'll make more money than you will mm-hmm. in real estate, you know, because they don't understand cash flow, you know, like my shirt says, right? Cash flow equals freedom.
Yep.
I don't understand if cash flow and passive income is different than accumulation mindset. And it's a very different mentality. You know, what, mm-hmm. like when I meet with people and say that they even just have $100,000, you know, in savings and, you know, and $100,000, if you're in the traditional mindset, say that you saved up in your mutual fund, just $100,000.
Sure.
You're only supposed to pull out based on the Wall Street Journal last October. And I was saying this even 15 plus years ago as a financial advisor, we're saying that 4% rule, you know, they talk yeah. about you can become financially independent if you live on 4% of your mutual funds, right? So mm-hmm. if you have, let's say $1 million, we'll go to that number instead, $1 million. Sure. You live on 4%, you're supposed to live on $40,000 a year. But in truth, and then we were saying this even 15 plus years ago as financial advisors who want the 4% rule to be true, we were saying 4% might be too high. We should maybe do 2 or 3%. So think about it. Even if it's mm-hmm. 3%, you have $1 million. You are a millionaire. Yet you're living on $30,000 a year
yep.
before you pay taxes.
Exactly.
You are a broke millionaire. You're living below the poverty line as a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
Now that same $1 million, if I have somebody comes to us and we've had several clients this way, they have $1 million. We know we can turn that conservatively to $100,000 a year, 10%, right?
Yeah.
And that's cash flow. That's income coming in. That's a huge difference, you know, of mm-hmm. lifestyle. That's a huge change. And that's why people all of a sudden will come with hope. I had another guy that had $3 million saved up, did everything, was debt-free, all yeah. that stuff. And he was packing away $200,000 a year. 52 years old.
Wow.
Financial advisor said, well, if you want to live on $500,000 a year, keep it up because by age 65, you keep saving the way you are, you might be able to retire.
Might be
and
able think to.
About it, he's got $3 million and he's still saying, well, you might be able to have that $500,000 a yeah. year. Now that's before inflation. I told him, I said, actually, you're going to have to wait till probably about 75 based mm-hmm. on that method versus if we do more of the alternative investments, guess what? We can actually do this in within 3 years. We can actually get you to $500,000. How's that?
Yeah.
That's much better. I'd rather be 55 and retired than 75 and retired. So,
yeah. And I always kind of think too, you know, when it comes to the, you know, I'll just call them sales guys when they're saying, well, you know, we want to have as much of your money for as long as possible. And a lot of times I don't think a lot of people fully understand exactly how they're paid. And I kind of even just spin it of, you know, I myself own real estate. I know many of my listeners own real estate. And I even just kind of propositioned it to one of my friends. It's like, well, okay, you have this property manager, right? Yep. And they charge you a percentage based on the rent collected, correct? It's like, well, yeah. And right. if there's you know, a slow month, there's a vacancy, hey, I don't have to pay a property management fee. If it's fully leased up, then I pay, you know, 8%, 10%, whatever on the monthly cash flow that comes in. And I say, okay, that's great. Now, hypothetically, let's just say that property manager came in. It's like, you know, We're going to change our billing structure. We're only going to charge you 1%, you know, not 10, 1%, but that 1% is going to be charged based on the value of the property. And that's going to be year after year. That's if it's 100% occupied or vacant the entire year. We're still going to charge you 1% right. of the property value. And I kind of get this, you know, weird look back at me. It's like, well, why in the world would I do that? You know, there's no incentive for them. You know, there's no cash flow coming in. You know, I should be paying them for what they're bringing in. And exactly. then I said, well, basically, I just described how the mutual fund industry works. They charge you a percentage of assets under management, 1 million, 1 billion, whatever it is. And they get their fee, whether it goes up, down, or sideways, and whether you get, you know, $30,000 a year or $100,000 a year in cash flow. And I think that's kind of the eye opener for a lot of people, is they don't understand how, you know, the quote typical financial advisor gets paid. They're based, you know, basically a percentage based how much they have on their management. They take none of the risk. Basically, all the people that are putting in money, they're taking the risk, and they get paid whether it goes up or down.
That's right.
So
yeah, it's interesting. I was just hanging out with financial advisors last month. I was at a leadership training with actually an insurance company I'm licensed with. I actually kept my insurance license after I quit being a financial advisor. I kept it for the last 20 years. And I was at this training with this company, and a lot of these guys were actually securities licensed too. They were selling mutual funds, had a lot of assets under management. Most of them had at least 100 million, sometimes even over $1 billion of assets under management. Okay. If you imagine, you know, even if you only made 1% on that 100 million, and that's kind of the low end for these guys,
right?
That's $1 million a year.
Yeah.
And as I was talking to them, to kind of, you know, just as we're hanging out, a lot of them even admitted, they even said, you know, honestly, I really hate this. Mm-hmm. They're like, because as you get bigger and more experienced and more knowledgeable, like these guys are doing, they're realizing there's a whole other world outside of this. And even a lot of things they didn't understand either. Right. Some of them were even saying, can I hire you, Chris, to help teach me how to do alternative investments like real estate investing? Because I have no clue. And in fact, because of their license, they can't even recommend real estate investing.
Right.
They can't recommend anything outside of mutual funds. And even if they want to invest in those things, like if they want to go into an apartment syndication, they have to report it to the company, and that company could tell them, no, you can't invest in that.
Right.
So they're bound, like they're handcuffed with what they do. Plus the money keeps them handcuffed. So of course, when they talk to their clients, and they're talking to me because I'm a colleague, but when they talk to their clients, they're going to tell you, yeah, you should buy this, even though they know it may not be the best thing. And that's the thing you have to understand, is that incentive, that financial incentive there. I mean, it's rough. It's something that you really can't trust what's coming out of people's mouths, not because they're bad people, but just because they're not incentivized to give you the full truth.
Right. Yep. Yeah. A lot of times it's just a matter of, you know, how are they paid? And, you know, if there's a, you know, expense ratio on there and that's how they get paid. And like you said, they're not exactly bad people, and they're, you know, maybe even trying to do best for their clients, but a lot of times they're handcuffed. Their boss says, no, you can only sell A, B, and C. Do not, you know, sway them towards real estate. You can only go through this narrow, you know, tunnel, if you will. And that's that. And okay, those are my options. So that's what I'm going to tell my clients about. So
that's why I dropped my securities license in 2005. It was one of the best decisions ever.
Because, gotcha. You
know, I could actually be free to even invest however I wanted to be, you know, and that's how I actually got financial freedom, where most of those guys, if you were to cut off their commissions today, even the million plus, they couldn't retire themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. A number of years ago, I got hit up by a number of, I won't give the name, but it's a very popular run-of-the-mill financial advisory firm. They usually have multiple offices in every single city. And when I kind of dug down into their fee structure and what they pushed and how they were compensated, it's like, well, okay, yeah, I could make six figures a year. That's great. But I don't feel comfortable, you know, doing this to my clients. So I never pursued it. So, but kind of going on the, I don't know, shall we say non-controversial topics, Chris. Now, if anyone's watched Dave Ramsey for any amount of time, whole life insurance, it's a scam. It is a ripoff. The commissions are so much higher. And, you know, people like Chris or anyone that sells a whole life insurance is just, you know, a bad person. They're ripping you off. You should just get a term insurance and invest the difference, and life will be, you know, just hunky dory for everyone. Why, maybe just taking a step back, why does Dave Ramsey just hate life or whole life insurance so much? Because in everything I've listened to, he doesn't really explain why he doesn't like it. It's just, oh, this whole life policy is whatever, $200 a month. This term is $20 a month. The term is cheaper, so therefore go with the term. And that's about as close as he gets as to why he hates it so much.
Yeah. Well, let's understand. I mean, I'm not inside of his head, right? I mean,
sure.
There could be some other things pulling him or swaying him from a financial business perspective. I would not be shocked if, just like with the mortgage company that he refers to, even though he wants to be debt free, he still has ownership in a mortgage company.
Yeah.
He probably has ownership in that term insurance company too, that he keeps recommending. Right. Now understand, if you're paycheck to paycheck, you should not be doing whole life insurance anyways.
Sure.
So most of his audience that he is talking to are people that are paycheck to paycheck or not even paycheck to paycheck. If they need basic needs, term insurance is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And that's what we would recommend anyways. So, he's right. He's actually right there for his audience. The problem is, again, like I said, a lot of his audience that follows him are the people that already believe in what Dave Ramsey teaches. They don't have to be taught to do it because they're already doing it.
Sure.
He just supports their it's like a Republican watching Fox News, right? You already believe it. You don't need Fox News to tell you what to believe because you already believe it, right? And that's what Dave Ramsey followers do. They're already savers. They're already the people he's already been talking about who to become. The people that need Dave Ramsey often don't want to listen to Dave Ramsey because they want to keep spending money, you know? So here's the problem is that you have to move up at different levels. Now here's one thing he is correct on. Whole life as it's been done traditionally is, in my opinion, a waste of money.
Okay.
Right. I actually bought one of those policies. So, you know, I mentioned I became financially independent, right? When I was 28 years old, where during that time I met a bunch of real estate guys. Well, one of them, of course, they all talked about how whole life was amazing. This whole infinite banking concept,
right?
Which will come up on Dave's shows occasionally, and they're saying like it's amazing. You know, you're able to, you know, be your own bank, you know, that kind of thing, and it sounded awesome conceptually. And the guy that set up my policy, as well as set up all these other people's policies, he set up what was called just a base only type policy, right? And I know from the video that you had referred me to, Dave Ramsey heard of what's called paid up additions.
Right.
You know, and he's even trying to say that. I don't know how much he understands about it, but at least he's heard about it enough because I'm sure it's been brought up many times. But these were a base only, which means in the first few years, you put your money into a whole life policy. Whole life's the opposite of term. Term gets more expensive over time, but whole life gets cheaper over time. So it's front loaded in the beginning and it's expensive. And then it gets cheaper as time goes on. The thing is, if you do a traditional whole life policy, the first 2 years, all of your money goes to insurance costs and fees, which essentially becomes the insurance agent's commissions.
Right? Okay.
So everything's going there. So when I bought it in 2006. And in fact, I bought two of them because I thought it was such a cool method and philosophy. I bought in hook, line, and sinker, did that whole Nelson Nash type thing. And, you know, I can buy my own cars with it and buy my houses with it, which I later found out was crap. You shouldn't do that. In current today's market. But that's what I was taught. Well, when 2008 hit in the recession, I had to cut off a lot of my income streams to start up a new business.
Okay.
So a lot of my passive income streams were gone. Plus the business was failing during the recession. We didn't go bankrupt, but man, it would have been easier if we did.
Okay.
I went over $1 million in debt by 2008. I was in the hole $1 million after being financially independent. It flip-flopped. And I couldn't afford to pay the premium because there was no cash value in there to keep it going. Because if you have cash value in there, if you have more money in there that they have this like tax-free savings account inside of it,
yeah,
you have that, you could use that money to pay your premiums and possibly, especially the way we design it now, forever. Mm-hmm. You could have it. You could pay it once and be done if you wanted to be. But I didn't do that because I didn't have any money in it. And I remember I asked the guy up front because I was an insurance agent. Remember, I was a financial advisor. I knew about life insurance, even though I was anti whole life in the early 2000s, I was all about, you know, whole life. I thought the same way as Dave Ramsey.
Okay.
And then when I came back around, I said, well, can I overfund this? Can I put in more to build the cash faster? The agent told me no. And I found out later he lied. And in fact, I confronted him about it, had a 2-hour debate with him. I even showed him how, if you have those paid up additions, right, where you're able to build up the cash part of it sooner,
right,
and not even have to have a bigger death benefit. Although I did show him same death benefit because he was claiming the death benefit was the real power of it. Well, guess what? I still beat his numbers.
Okay.
And what it came down to is when I knocked down every one of his objections, the insurance agent finally just told me, he said, Chris, I didn't do it that way because I can't afford to cut my commissions.
Oh.
And I said, that is why I'll never send you a person again.
This show is brought to you today by Timothy Hero with Hero Mortgages. Did you know traditional lenders cap you at no more than 10 rental loans in your name? Many have complicated underwriting processes, and if you are self-employed, even more documentation and income verification is needed. Why not work with a loan broker that can get you the best terms with an unlimited amount of loans for your investment properties? 30-year fixed rates starting at 5.8%. These loans do not report on your credit report, can be done right in an LLC, and can be used for 1 to 30 unit properties or portfolios, all with faster closing times and less documentation than a traditional lender will require. Check out episode number 17 for more info, or go to timothyhero.com to get a quote today.
Wow.
So
the truth finally came out.
Dave Ramsey say whole life is a ripoff. In that scenario, the way he designed them, absolutely 100% yes. I agree with them. I can guarantee Dave and Susie, you know, all those guys out there, you know, Dave especially hasn't seen everything out there. And the truth is, Dave is one of those guys that you could tell, like, he learned a little bit in the 90s or the 80s, and he just keeps teaching the same thing as if it's gospel, right?
Right.
Just like the 12% average of the market. He holds on to that like it's true, even though it's never been true. You know, I mean, he holds on to that, you know, so he teaches a lot of things with such power and confidence that people just say, he must be right.
Yeah.
He's convicted. He's convinced that's the case. So when that insurance agent said, you know, and you, if you're look it up on YouTube, that the insurance agent didn't do a great job anyways.
No.
He was a traditional financial advisor trying to argue with Dave. It doesn't work. But I mean, the agent was, you know, that whole debate there was, you know, he's selling like whole life's always a ripoff. No, never good. Cause you can pay a 20th of the cost for term insurance. Now, Dave also believes, and he believes what I taught as well, is that when you hit a certain age and you have so many assets that you've saved up, you no longer need life insurance, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually your stuff becomes the life insurance.
Right. Or off. Self-insured.
Yeah, you're self-insured. And that insurance agent tried to make that, you know, try to make the point of, well, hey, people are going to want to do that. And Dave's like, why? Why? Just have them sell off stuff. Well, if you have real estate, you already know, you may or may not want to sell off stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you may want to keep that legacy going for your kids. Mm. And maybe you don't care about leaving anything behind. Well, fine, then don't. You know, there's ways to actually eat up almost all your life insurance and not leave your kids hardly anything. You know, there are ways to do that. But of course they weren't talking about that, but Dave was taught the traditional thing, which is you get to a point like by 65 or so you're debt free, you save up enough cash, and then you can self-insure, which like you said, is really no insurance, you know, and it's actually taxable life insurance because most of the things that you pass on will get taxed to your heirs, especially like 401ks and IRAs, they will be taxed.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with this. The ironic thing with what Dave's teaching was actually taught by insurance companies.
Okay.
Because I want you to think about this. Think of like an insurance company. An insurance company does not want you to keep your life insurance. Why? Because they don't want to pay out. So what better marketing sales tactic to teach people? And remember, this is just the same as like financial institutions like your Fidelity, your Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch's teaching you to keep your money stored up and let it sit there forever while they make their fees, like you were talking about, right?
Right.
It's no different than insurance companies. They are just like those financial institutions. They will say, hey, you know, when you get old enough, you have enough assets, we'll cancel your life insurance, especially when you're right around, you know, 65.
Right.
Why? Because most people don't die by 65. Most people
are, especially, you know, now.
Average age is 77 or 80, depending on if you're a man or a woman.
Yeah.
So if they know that, they're like, hey, we can cancel this. So by own insurance companies' admissions, and I know I've been around them for years, they've said only about 0.5% of all insurance policies ever pay out, term insurance policies
specifically. Term, exactly.
They're a profitable thing. This is like McDonald's. They don't make money on the hamburgers. They make money on the soft drinks, right? And the fries. Those are the things that they can charge more for and make a killing. That's what it is for the insurance companies. For them, the drink and the fries is the term insurance. The thing that they don't make a lot of money on is the whole life insurance.
Yeah.
So of course they're going to push term, and term is cheap. So for a consumer minded person, that's cheap. This is like the perfect thing, right?
Exactly.
And of course it's going to get too expensive. But if you ever keep a term insurance policy till you're age 77, you'll find out you'll pay your entire death benefit by that point.
Yeah.
So they didn't lose any money, even if you do live to the average age.
Yeah.
And they bank on it, people will cancel it. The cool thing is if you're with a mutual company, a mutual whole life company, All those profits from those term policies get paid as dividends to the whole life policyholders. Mm-hmm. Tax-free, gross tax-free, comes out tax-free like a Roth IRA, but there's no 59.5 rule.
Right.
So I know Dave knows some of this stuff, and of course he's teaching it. Again, if he's teaching the people that are broke, he should just say, listen, whole life should not even be on your radar.
Yeah.
And it's true, because mm-hmm. I would say the same thing. But if someone's looking to start investing, especially if you want to do real estate investing, or if you want to do something that actually grows your money, the whole life policy is not the answer to getting you rich. It won't get you financially free either. Like I said, nothing that a financial advisor offers will get you to financial freedom. Mm-hmm. It requires you to do something else with it. The cool thing I can do with my whole life policy and with all of our clients that what they're doing is that they can get a bank line of credit against that cash savings that's in there. Uh-huh. So imagine if you had like a Roth IRA that also had a line of credit against that, much like a home equity line of credit.
Yeah.
But they're still paying you interest on it. Uh-huh. So if I'm earning, say, even 5% tax-free on my money, then I get a bank line of credit that's only 3% a year, right? That means even if I use the line of credit, I'm still making 2% a year, because I'm making 2% more than that 3% I'm paying on. But the cool thing is I can take that and still go and invest in real estate. Make, say I'm only making 10%, which is a conservative return in real estate. I'm making 10% plus 2% means I made 12% instead of just 10 using my own cash.
Right.
So I move my cash more into these policies, and I even keep my cash reserves in there because I don't want to earn 0.0% at my bank.
That's taxable at your highest interest rate.
Yeah. I mean, my bank finally is paying me like 0.05% right now. Yay. And then I get taxed on 0.05%.
Yeah.
So I get taxed on 0.0%, where I can make 5%+ returns on my life insurance tax-free. Mm-hmm. And I can also make money in my real estate. It's not about either or, but it has to be designed just right where you have the lowest cost possible to get the maximum gains.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And even just the concept of the, you know, life insurance. I mean, a couple of years ago, one of my high school classmates, his younger brother just passed away unexpectedly, you know, in his 20s, and he didn't have any type of insurance. So I do think I think everyone should have some type of insurance, you know, whether that's term or whole life, you know, whatever is best. I mean, you know, there's going to get to the point that people are dependent on you and dependent on your income. And, you know, none of us is guaranteed tomorrow. And if we get hit by that proverbial Mack truck, we want to make sure that our dependents are, you know, well-positioned to be financially secure. With that, I've always kind of looked at too, where, you know, like you said, with whole life insurance, it is expensive up front, but it gets cheaper over time, where term is kind of the other way. One of my friends, and he's actually works for State Farm. He's been my State Farm guy for years. He always had an interesting twist on getting life insurance early for kids. Cause again, Dave Ramsey is like, oh, well, you're not dependent on the kids. The kids aren't bringing a salary. It's stupid to get a life insurance policy on a kid. It's like, yes, if you're looking at it solely from, you know, little junior, okay, he doesn't have a job, he's not contributing to the family. Okay, I get that. But getting insurance early, as Paul always put, is ensures their insurability. And he shares his story that between his nieces and nephews and their cousins, by, I don't remember exactly, I want to say it was by age 13, three of the 10 cousins just flat out could not get insurance. I know one was Crohn's disease and I can't remember the other two, but as long as they live, they can't get life insurance, or maybe they'll find someone they're just going to pay through the nose. But had they gotten that policy, you know, at age 10, and then that kind of like defers the risk onto the life insurance company, like, okay, we had this individual, cancer, Crohn's disease, you know, whatever the medical ailment is. Well, we do have a signed contract. We are, you know, need to fulfill this. So when they pass away, which is probably going to be earlier rather than later, we are committed to paying that $1 million or whatever the, you know, face value is. So I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I always just kind of looked at that the other string, if you will, with Dave Ramsey, when he kind of poo-poos on life insurance. And even when you should get it, you should only get it when you're drawing a salary and people are dependent on you, but life never goes the way we plan on. And I kind of look at it, it's like, you know, if you think
whole life insurance is expensive. You know, try to get term life insurance when you've been diagnosed with cancer or Crohn's disease.
True. Yeah, it's true. It's if we all had a crystal ball, I mean, we would all, of course, buy the life insurance the day before we die, right? Mm-hmm, or the day before we're uninsurable, you know?
Right.
But we don't, you know, we really don't. We really are just kind of guessing. Mm-hmm. And so that's the key thing. And yeah, you're right. I mean, like with kids, I mean, that could definitely be a great option. I mean, you remind me of the best man at my first wedding, right?
Okay.
You know, he actually was the one that introduced me into the financial advising business. He quit. And in fact, he had a universal life policy. We were more selling like variable policies or universal life policies back then. And he was going to cancel it because it was $100 a month. So mm-hmm. expensive, especially for a single 24-year-old guy.
Yeah.
I convinced him. I said, well, listen, like, yeah, if you're going to cancel it, fine, but let's make sure you at least get term insurance. Mm-hmm. And remember, he didn't have a family. He was a single college kid. He was going to flight school. And he said, all right, fine. You know, and so we got it for him. It was a whopping $16 a month.
Yeah.
For his
that's a Netflix subscription right there. Yeah.
Benefit policy. Right. Now the crazy thing is 9 months later, I get a letter from the insurance company saying, did you know he would die? I'm like,
oh, wow.
Wait, what? And this is of course before Facebook.
Sure.
He had moved out of state. You know, back then we only had our Palm Pilots.
Yeah.
That dates. Yeah. Right. So it's not like we had this like really active thing. But then I asked one of our mutual friends, I said, yeah, did you hear he died in a plane wreck when they were flying and found out he had died like in a training, like the call tower in California called their plane down too early, crashed and ran into a mountain.
Oh,
and his parents, I called them up and they said, oh, we're so sorry. We just got his effects, you know, like all of his stuff, including his Palm Pilot with attacks. We never got to tell everybody about the funeral. And they said, you know what? So he did have insurance. Oh, we hope we get that money because the school had $100,000 liability policy they paid out to the family, but they were now suing the airport, right? Mm-hmm. The control tower.
For the liability.
Going through a lengthy legal process. They said, you know, we could really use that $250,000. And this guy wasn't married, didn't have kids, mm-hmm. but because of the situation, they're saying, you know what, we could really use that money to get justice for our son's death because that was unjust. What happened? Sure. And I mean, you just never know. I mean, there's mm-hmm. so many situations like that. I'll tell you another one about the death benefit. I rarely ever talk about the death benefit because even though that's great, I look at that as icing on the cake because mm-hmm. the way I design it, for one, the reason why whole life is less of a ripoff than term is that term you pay for your entire life, you have to die to get paid out.
Yep.
So whole life. The crazy thing is the way I design them is that it's not only been paying for itself, but it actually has just as much in that cash value tax-free account by year five as what you paid into it, sometimes more.
Okay.
So it essentially becomes free insurance. So okay. Most people, when they see that, they say, man, term insurance is the biggest ripoff because I have to keep paying. I'll never get that money back or anything I can use
right.
until I die. Where here, within 5 years, I've got all my money back. And essentially the thing's paying for itself by year three. So mm-hmm. What's the big fuss, you know? And that's the thing that Dave Ramsey was trying to say. He's trying to say, oh, you pay 20 times more.
Yeah.
Well, in truth, I pay a lot more for the term insurance because it never pays out until mm-hmm. I'm dead. So I don't get any benefit. Well, the life insurance, the whole life, I get a living benefit. I can use it now.
Yeah.
But that death benefit is important because I did have one client. She was 65 years old, single, no kids. And she had $2 million in an IRA. Right, that she had inherited from her parents, and she didn't need the money. She was very happy being a chiropractor the way she was, and we were talking about getting a whole life policy on her, and it was like $13,000 a year premium we're going to do for her, right? And after she got it, the next month she said, "I'm canceling it." I said, "Well, if you cancel it, you're going to cost yourself cash flow." Mm-hmm. Well, why is that? Well, easy, because now you can't use your IRA money. Now you got to live on that 3%. So now you're living on $60,000 a year and you get taxed on it, which was barely enough for her to make it if she quit working at that point. I said, but with inflation, you know, you could be running out of money pretty quick. Mm-hmm. I said, but if we had the life insurance, because that death benefit is there, we have the permission to blow all your money while you're alive. And in fact, not just blow your money, but we can even get a reverse mortgage on your house that's paid off free and clear, like because Dave Ramsey told her to do that, right?
Sure.
We get a reverse mortgage on that. They'll pay you $2,200 a month. So you'll be making over, you know, $26,000 a year off of that. And that $2 million, now we can actually spend it down. And I didn't even do as like real estate returns. I just said conservatively, like based on our traditional financial advisor, like live on four, you know, like making a 4% return on her money in her accounts, her mutual funds, right? 4%, not 10, 12,
right.
Four. And I said, based on that, we can now pull out with that and your reverse mortgage about $150,000 a year.
Wow.
So I said, I'm like, so it costs you $13,000 to get $150,000. So let's take out that 13. Great. You're still left about $140,000. Do you want $60,000 or $140,000 a year? $140,000.
Yeah.
Great. Get the life insurance because that allows us to blow, have a mortgage because it'll get paid off by life insurance. You can blow through all your cash and still you might even leave something behind for your nieces and nephews.
Wow.
And that's what she did.
Okay. Yeah. Right there. I think is like you said, and we won't go down the rabbit hole of reverse mortgages and some of the other components, but I think it just comes down to, you know, everyone's a little bit different. Everyone's, you know, different situation and there's numerous ways to design it. The way Dave Ramsey, I'll say attacks whole life insurance, I kind of equated to, you know, years ago you had the Ford Pinto. Yes. Horrible design, what could cause, you know, tremendous suffering and obviously death. And, you know, not to throw out the Ford versus Chevy jokes out there, but looking at it of, oh, the Ford Pinto is bad, ergo all Fords are bad. So therefore never get a Ford. And I think that's kind of his philosophy. Like, yes, a whole life insurance policy designed this way, like you said, is bad, but that doesn't mean every whole life insurance policy ever made or designed or way they could be designed is bad nonetheless. So.
Yeah, Dave Ramsey must be really cold out there in Tennessee because he is the king of blanket statements.
Yeah, he is.
Like,
yeah.
He covers himself in blanket statements all day long. And that's how you know if someone speaks in absolutes, when it's talking about a strategy,
yeah,
that is when you know they are completely off the rocker.
Yeah.
That's when you know they're going to be wrong. Now, a principle, and we talked about that before. He talked about principles. Principles be debt-free. No, it's not. The principle, if you're looking for a principle is something that's eternal. It doesn't ever change. It's always constant, right?
Okay.
Where a strategy will change around that principle, but it can change based on time and circumstances. So for example, when he says a principle is to pay off all your debt, or he even said in that interview, he said, never get a credit card. It's always bad.
Yeah.
But you know,
credit scores don't matter.
Yeah. We're like, sometimes actually credit card is great. I mean, not beyond the points, which is great, but if I can leverage money at a cheaper rate than inflation or with what I'm earning, I would use a credit card, you know, like I'm okay with that, you know, but he always says credit cards are always bad. There's nothing good with credit cards. He even said that. Again, strategy, the credit card is a strategy because for some people and for most people, I would say he is absolutely 100% correct, but he's speaking as if it's everybody.
Yeah, right? Right.
Debt-free. The real principle of debt-free is not debt-free. That's a strategy. The real principle is live within your means. Right? Mm-hmm. Or produce more than you consume. That is an eternal principle. That's eternal principle in relationships. That's eternal principle in calories. You burn more calories than you consume. Otherwise, you get bigger, right?
Exactly.
You know, it makes sense. Like it's always about that principle of giving more than you receive, right? And it's the same thing. You produce more than you consume. You try to live within those means that you have there. That's the principle. Debt can get you living outside your means, but we know plenty of people, ourselves included, where we could take on plenty of debt, especially if we buy assets with it that produce more than the debt, and we're fine. We can service that debt and do no problem with it. If debt were so evil, why do banks have so much of it?
Exactly.
Right? I mean, banks are debt companies. Every time they take a dollar from you in savings, they are in debt to you.
Yeah.
But you never see a bank say, you know what? I was just listening to Dave Ramsey the other day. Although you've been a great client for the last 40 years, do you know how much we're going to pay you in interest over your lifetime? That 0.1%, that adds up.
Yeah.
You know? So we're going to pay you back all your money. Like you're going to take all your savings back. Well, I don't want you to. No, you need to take your savings back because it's not worth it.
Yeah.
They're not going to say that because they know they're creating arbitrage. They're creating leverage.
Yeah.
And then Dave will even go in the Bible. He'll say, you'll quote from the New Testament saying like, you know, oh, debt's bad. It even says in the Bible, the good book says this. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I read that same book. And I got a different story because I also read the parable of the talents that Jesus taught. The parable of the talents has three of those servants that all went into debt to that master. It wasn't their money. They were borrowing it from their master. They were charged to go make more with it, which I believe is our charge in life too. Not just with money, but with everything. All of our blessings were given, but they're given the charge to do that with those sums of money. The one person that still paid back their money, they were a Dave Ramsey fan. The person that had the one bag of talents, the one bag of coins there, came back, returned it to him, paid back his debt. But the master was pretty upset with him because he didn't make anything more with it. He said, right, he should have done something with that, like these other two did. In fact, give me your one. I'm going to give it to the guy that made 10. Mm-hmm. He's going to keep it. And you get out. I don't want to see you again. That was a Dave Ramsey fan. He buried it, paid back his debt. He didn't lose it. You know, you could have had a.
But he didn't do anything with it. Yeah,
that was given. You know, maybe he was given 3 bags and he lost them all. Right, he gambled it. Right,
right.
He could have had that for some. But that wasn't the point. The point is he was using a debt principle, and using it in a good way. But still, Dave says, "Oh, you should never have debt. Debt is always bad." Mm-hmm. Well, and we were talking about before on the air, like he's. You know, he's doing massive projects. I guarantee he's not paying all cash for some of those projects.
Oh yeah, no question.
So, and that's what my wife found out too. She also was the first approved Dave Ramsey instructor in the state of Utah. And she even found out as she went to his corporate office and, you know, started hanging out with him and his team. She's like, wait a minute, the stuff he does is different than what he teaches.
Yeah.
Why is he like two-faced like this? You know?
Yeah.
And again, good man, like does so much good in the world for those people that are struggling to make it day after day, month mm-hmm. after month. But I'm talking to those of you that have gotten past the day after day, or you yep. want to get past the day after day, and you're starting to see some surplus. You want to become free. That mm-hmm. next step, just you got to throw the rest of it out.
Right. So, all right. Now, as we're getting towards the end of this, Chris, on kind of for closing, and you know, obviously, if people are interested in learning more, you know, maybe we can, you know, address how my listeners can reach out to you, but maybe just as a final thought, how can a anti-financial advisor, you know, help the average person, so to speak? And maybe I forget which podcast it was on, but you highlighted a client you were working with that went from, let's double check my notes, $200 a month in cash flow to $12,000 a month in 6 months. And maybe just very high level, you can address that and how you can help others really just achieve cash flow, not just a huge IRA or, you know, home equity or savings account, so to speak.
Yeah. So what we do, like, is anti-financial advisors, right? We're not financial advisors. We're not investment advisors. We don't offer any investments. We don't even sell or raise capital for our clients. But what we do is we're strategists and we're connectors.
Okay.
So we help you strategize a game plan using alternative investments, which we have vetted investment type of professionals that we have on our team, people that do everything from turnkey real estate to apartment or self-storage syndications to raw land, to franchises, to oil and gas, things that are tended to have real assets backing them up, not stocks. So when we're anti-financial advisors, because we're anti-mutual fund, right?
Sure.
We're anti that traditional mindset. If you haven't figured that out already.
No, it was a little subtle, but yeah.
A little subtle. Yeah, I know. We kind of hide a little bit what we talk about here, but we like to glaze it over and kind of sugarcoat it.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's what we do, is we really help create a game plan to help you get out that rat race, whatever that is, whatever passive income is required for you to be able to say, I'm work optional. I now work because I want to, not because I have to. And so, yeah, what you were referencing there was actually one client. He heard us on a podcast, and he was actually just retiring from the military. And he said, hey, I've got $1 million. I want to be able to get this $1 million doing something for me, because I don't want to just live on $30,000 a year, right?
Sure.
Like this financial advisor is telling him to do. He's like, I want more than that. And he even had a military pension too, but he's like, I want more. I want freedom to go do what I want. I'm still young. You know, he's in his mid 50s. And so we talked about that. And so he started working with our team, and 6 months later, he sent us an email. He said, hey, as an update, when you first met me, I was $200 a month of income coming in. Well, now I'm at $12,000 a month.
Wow.
We got him investing in, he did everything. I mean, he did a variety of things. We don't try to have people just do one strategy, because that's when
sure.
you know that's not always diversified or good, but he bought some turnkey rentals. He got some of those properties. Some of them were new construction, so he doesn't worry about maintenance as much. And he doesn't manage it either. So he has a property manager. He's hands off. He did some syndications, did some in that oil and gas space that he's starting to get paid on pretty well too. Because that pays around 10 or 15% a year for cash flow for him. So all was said and done, he's like, hey, guess what? I'm at about $12,000 a month, and it's still going up. You know, we're still going here. So that's really what it is. It's just, we help, you know, figure out what your goals, what your time horizons, everything else, and then which strategies will best match up and which deals might be good. Again, we never give investment advice.
Sure.
Unlike rich dad, poor dad, which teaches you the general concept, but doesn't give you any actual application. Or sometimes you get in the real estate space, you know, people are like, hey, you can make lots of passive income. And then you find out they're telling you just to create a whole real estate business that's going to be like a part-time job.
Right.
We don't do that. We stay very passive, as if you're going to keep working or not. It doesn't matter. So okay. You have that time freedom to do what you want.
Very good. That's good. All right. Well, now if any of my listeners, you know, maybe are listening to this, and we've had, you know, turnkey providers on my show and other, you know, passive investments before this one, actually just interviewed someone that was bringing a water as a service, which was a very interesting investment. But for any of my listeners out there that are thinking, you know, yes, I want to, you know, be financially free. I want to increase my cash flow. I want to, you know, live a life now, like your sign says, live your life now, not tomorrow. What's the easiest way to reach out to you, Chris?
Well, the best way is go to moneyripples.com.
Okay.
You go right on there. In fact, cool thing is they have a passive income calculator on there. So you can answer a few financial questions on there and find out pretty much how much passive income you could create in the next 12 months.
Wow.
We've had people put it in and it might only be a few $1,000. And then we've had other people put numbers in that it's like, you know, 500,000, 600,000 in the next year.
Oh, geez.
Needless to say, those are the people that should be talking to us.
Right. Exactly.
They're coming up with like 100,000 plus. Heck, even if it's 20,000-30,000 plus, they should be talking to us. But but that's a great way to contact us through that website. You can also follow our podcast, The Chris Miles Money Show, as you had mentioned earlier.
All right. Sounds good. And I'll have, for all those listening, I'll have these links in the show notes for you to click on and get to at a later time. So, all right. Well, with that, Chris, definitely enjoyed our conversation, learned some things myself, and might have to have you back on a later time.
Hey, I'd love to be on, man.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for coming on, Chris.
You bet.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.